For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller. Late nights are a frustrating fact of life for many musicians. All too often, the time after sundown is the only time left for performing, practicing, working against an upcoming deadline, or agonizing over an artistic quandary. But for composer Thomas Palmer, still an undergraduate at the University of South Carolina School of Music, there's inspiration to be found even in the drudgery of a sleep-deprived state. I spoke with Thomas not long ago about his artistic response to those late nights, a recently published chamber work called Red Eye. He also shared with me about another quintet of his called Autumn Blue. Here's part of our conversation on the two works, plus insights into his compositional process and how he started out as a composer. Thomas, it's great to have you.
Great to be here.
How did you decide that you wanted to pursue composition?
Oh, wow. I'm not sure there was ever any big moment where I decided that that's what I wanted to do. In high school, I was in the band programs, and before that, I grew up playing piano, so music was always part of my life. And sometime in high school, I started trying to write things myself, and I really enjoyed it, so much so that like I really just liked writing more than really performing or anything else. And so when I went to apply to college, that's what I applied for. And so here I am.
Did you ease into it, say, with arranging?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. So did all kinds of terrible arrangements in like middle school band, things like that.
And some hand copying on parchment paper of the fugues and counterpoint, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That too.
Well, now, like you said, you're a senior at the University of South Carolina School of Music, pursuing degrees in both composition and clarinet performance.
Yes.
Is that right? And you're also a published composer.
I am.
Well, that congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a really exciting thing. This piece that I have with me right here, Red Eye, is my most recent one. And I had a really great recording of it, and I posted it on my Facebook page, and it got a lot of attention, and that was really cool. I guess a week or so later, I was contacted by a publisher who asked me if I'd be interested in publishing the piece with his publishing company, and I really didn't know what to think. I was very excited, and I ended up going with it. So now this piece is published with Murphy Music Press.
So they reached out to you. This wasn't one of those situations where you had to go knocking on doors. They actually...
Yeah, it was crazy. Okay. It felt really cool.
Is it typical, you would say, for an undergraduate to be published? You don't have to be modest here.
I don't really know about typical. I would think that it's less common, but it's not, you know, totally unheard of.
And it was the Acropolis Reed Quintet which played your composition,
yes.
Red Eye, is that right, at this year's past Mostly Modern Festival in Saratoga Springs, New York. And they posted this online. Is it about a late night flight or something else? You'll have to ask the composer. So here I am asking you, what is it about, or is it even about anything?
Right. I really like the last part of that question there. It's sometimes you write things that just aren't, you know, about something specific. This one is, and it is not about a late night flight. It's actually about being up really late and having just a series of sleepless nights and, you know, doing that kind of thing. Your eyes often will turn red. And so the title Red Eye comes from being really tired and kind of noticing how different the world seems when it's late at night and you're the only one awake.
Something you know nothing about as a double major and creative.
Yeah. No, never done that before.
So what's happening in this music that may capture something of that situation?
Also, it's the main portion of it is very agitated and very driving. You know, I've found that when you're up really late, oftentimes it's because you're stressed and you're working on things. And so for me, that kind of comes across in the music. It also has a center section that is the opposite. It slows down and becomes a lot more calm. I've also found, you know, just like being stressed and awake at night. Sometimes it's very peaceful to be awake at night and to be working alone and with nothing distracting you and nothing bothering you. And so that's kind of like what the middle section is for me.
And this is written for your standard forces of a wind quintet, I guess.
Yeah, a reed quintet, which is a little less standard in general. Okay. It's becoming more standard because of groups like Acropolis, and that's fantastic. So instrumentation is oboe, clarinet, alto saxophone, bass clarinet, and bassoon.
Okay.
Really
so
cool group.
So leaving out the French horn and the flute.
Yes.
And you have another composition as well called Autumn Blue.
Yes.
Which was performed the previous year, also at the Mostly Modern Festival, by, I believe, the Imani Winds.
Yes,
who are, I mean, these are some names I've heard before in the wind performance world. I see a pattern here, though. Do you have a preference for these colorful titles, a la Michael Twerk or somebody?
That was coincidental, but yeah, it kind of seems that way. I guess the color of the ensemble kind of brings that up. I feel like, especially the Imani Winds, they are what I would call a very colorful ensemble.
And Autumn Blue, is it fair to ask for this piece what it's about, or is this a little more abstract?
Yeah, it is just a touch more abstract, but it definitely has like some concrete basis. Autumn Blue comes from memories that I have growing up in the South, the Southeast. And if you're up kind of early in the morning, before anyone else is. Sometimes in the early autumn, the sky will be just totally blue with not a cloud anywhere, and it's really kind of magical. It feels like you're the only person there, and it's a really cool feeling. And so drawing from memories of that is kind of what drove that piece.
Would it be fair to call this kind of music impressionistic, or is that limiting it too much to some kind of...
I don't think it's limiting it at all. No, I like okay. that. Yeah.
And what are the forces for this piece? Is this also your reed quintet or a...
No, so that is standard woodwind quintet. So flute, oboe, clarinet, French horn, and bassoon.
And you're a clarinetist.
I am.
So do you anticipate ensembles featuring your instrument being your specialty moving forward? Or do you want to one day set down the beloved licorice stick?
I certainly don't want to kind of box myself in to making that like a specialty. I really do like writing for the clarinet because it's so, it can do so many different things. But also, and I am drawn to wind music in general because, you know, that's kind of what I grew up around in wind bands and playing clarinet. So I am very comfortable with that and very used to that, but I also just really like it. Wind music, especially wind chamber music, it, like I said about the Imani Winds, the amount of color that they're able to produce from their instruments, it's almost like all five of the instruments are totally foreground. There's no background there. And so working with ensembles like that, where everything is just, you know, it seems like it's directly in front of you, that's a lot of fun. It's very high energy.
So maybe there's some more tone color differences instrument to instrument than, say, with a string quintet or sextet, would you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, what's your compositional process look like?
I bet it's a mess.
Yeah, different for every piece, but generally, you know, do you start with a theme in mind or just work from inspiration? What does it look like?
Well, it's becoming more structured, which is a good thing, I think. And I've gone through several different iterations of the process as I learned kind of more about myself as a composer. I think for most things, I start at the piano and really just playing and writing things down that sound good and that I like. I'll usually start if I'm working on like a commission or something that I know what it's, you know, specific things about it. I'll start with an image or a feeling in mind. And I found it's really helpful to write down what those things are directly on the paper. You know, what do I want this to sound like? What are some sort of ideas that I'm working with? And so I'll play, I'll record a bunch with my phone, write a bunch. And then when I have all of those pieces together, just like a bunch of different fragments of things, then I'll start kind of piecing it together on the paper. I write with pencil and paper. I found that is very helpful to me. I don't like to restrict myself in the beginning of the compositional process. So when I'm writing on the paper, usually I'm not putting in note values or bar lines or any sort of notational things. I'm just writing, you know, big structure and overarching harmony and that kind of thing. And then usually at some point in there, I decide I hate everything and throw it away. Start over a few times. But eventually I get to a point where I'm making concrete decisions. And this is the point for me where it's helpful to start putting restrictions on things. You know, like, do I want to restrict pitch content? Do I want to restrict where the harmony's going? You know, what exactly is my form going to look like? And then I start putting in more concrete elements. And then eventually I jump over to notation software and put everything in. And usually I'm pretty close to a deadline at that point, so we're moving fast. And then I have a score.
So you found limits helpful.
Limits are very, very helpful for me. I find, as many other composers have in the past and have written about in the past, that writing without limits that you put on yourself or that, you know, a project puts on you, when everything's possible, it's almost like it makes it so much harder to write because there's no problem to solve. There's no puzzle to kind of figure out. It's just, if anything goes, then, you know, like, it's almost like it's impossible to make decisions.
It kind of reminds me of this idea I've heard before that music is made in the silence between notes. Maybe it's a very cliche thing, but I don't know, this idea of both presence and absence, or what's there but also what's left under the table, those superfluous notes I think Brahms once talked about, that you know, what you cut away makes the music inside.
Yeah, I've definitely found that to be true in some ways, especially in my own writing, when I have a bunch of different things and I'm not really sure where I'm going or what I'm doing. But once I've made a decision about something, it doesn't even matter what it is. I decide that, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, I want the piece to go in this direction. Once you start making those decisions and start cutting away things that don't belong, it's like then you start to get something really, really beautiful, something that you really like.
So when you do have those moments, though, that are harder moving forward, say composer's block, have you found a good solution for that, or is there no help?
I'd like to say that I have found a really great solution, and that would totally be a lie. I have found some things that help, and one of those things is treating composition with a schedule and approaching it like, you know, it's my job, as opposed to just kind of waiting for inspiration, which is something that I feel like I still do a lot, as much as I try not to. And I feel like that's an easy thing to fall into. You kind of just wait until something hits you. But I found it's easier in the long run to have, like, set out specific time to really work on composition and kind of, like, hone your craft. So that really helps. Once I've kind of got an idea of, like, when I'm doing this every day, it kind of helps the creative juices flow, I guess. And then also treating things like you're solving problems. So if you come to a section of the piece that isn't working or that you don't like, for me, what I do is I'll write out different solutions. You know, like, what are some possibilities that this could be? And I'll do like 6 or 7 different options and try them out. And usually in doing so, I won't actually find an option that I like, but I'll kind of push myself in the right direction.
Do you have any compositional inspirations at the moment? You know, currently living or long dead composers who inform your style or approach the most, or at least give you some inspiration?
Yeah, wow. My inspirations change all the time, I would say. Right now, I have been listening to a lot of Debussy and French Impressionism in general, and also minimalism has been a big thing for me right now. You know, recently I've been on kind of a Nico Muhly thing as well. The University of South Carolina last year did the recording for a piece that we commissioned from him. It's a bassoon concerto and wind ensemble. So I was in the recording for that and working really closely with his music, got me kind of really into it. So listening to Nico Muhly, listening to French Impressionism, and really just everything right now.
And even though you're still quite young in your early period, I guess, you know, looking at a whole life, do you have advice for aspiring composers who are even younger than yourself, say middle or high school or something?
I think the biggest thing that I wish I knew earlier was, well, first of all, that being a composer and doing composition, and really this just goes for music in general, is totally possible. And you don't have to do the starving artist thing. You know, you don't have to fight for jobs and that sort of thing. It is totally possible. And so I wish that I wasn't worrying so much about that earlier on. And then the other thing is like I said, treat it like it's your job. Have set time where you go and compose, or you go and practice your instrument, and really treat it like, you know, this is what you're going to be doing with your life. And I found that helps a lot.
Well, that reminds me, are there any misconceptions you've encountered about what a composer does? I mean, I think about this meme where there's, I think, six different blocks, and, you know, you see what my mom thinks I do, what my friends think I do, what I actually, what's the breakdown there for
Oh, wow.
From what you've seen?
I think the biggest misconception that I also had is, you know, back to the inspiration thing, that everything would just come to you in a flash of beautiful inspiration, and you'd sit down in some sort of like daze and write down, you know, a whole symphony, and then you've got it and you look crazy afterwards.
But come tear.
Right, exactly. But really, at least in my experience, maybe that is some people's experience, but that is not mine at all. It's, I don't want to say calculated and things of that nature, but it's a lot less crazy burst of inspiration and more kind of methodical approach.
I mean, again, all these cliches keep coming to mind, or I guess I should say, you know, famous sayings, but Thomas Edison's, you know, 99%, 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. Sounds like what you're saying.
Yes,
here.
Absolutely. In my experience.
Well, and you're a senior, so you're graduating soon.
I am.
What's next, or what do you hope is next once you finish?
Well, I'm working on applications for graduate programs right now. I want to do a master's in music in composition. Looking at a lot of different schools right now, I'm kind of pointing myself a little bit towards the Northeast, but I'm, you know, open and applying to a lot of different schools. So right now I'm applying to the Manhattan School of Music and New York University, Indiana. I'm just really trying to find some professors that I want to work with. And I really want to keep going with composition. I feel like I have a lot of momentum right now and I don't want to stop.
And longer term, what, say, would you want your legacy to be? Whether a specific magnum opus you might write, you know, some great cycle of operas, or
oh wow,
or you know, maybe just as a great orchestrator, or what have you. I mean, what long term would you say is your aspiration?
Well, I mean, I'd really love to do freelancing composition, and I feel like, you know, that's the dream for a lot of us, is just be able to make your living doing only composition. And that'd be cool, but I also really would love to work with music nonprofits or doing other aspects of that sort of thing, like the Mostly Modern Festival, for example. That's a really, really cool thing to be part of that, and I've seen a lot of what goes into making that happen, and, you know, that's something that, like, that would be really cool to be part of something like that.
Well, Thomas, all best with those plans moving forward, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
A conversation I had with composer Thomas Palmer, including excerpts from his composition Red Eye, performed by the Acropolis Reed Quintet at the 2019 Mostly Modern Festival in Saratoga Springs, New York, as well as selections from his Autumn Blue, performed the previous year at the festival by Imani Wins. Special thanks to the Mostly Modern Festival for those recordings. For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller.